It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock, and you are listening to Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT, Knoxville. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Next week, the third annual East Tennessee Women's Leadership Summit will take place in Knoxville. Today, we have a preview of the summit, along with a discussion about women in business. Our guests today are Cynthia Gibson of Scripps Networks Interactive, public relations specialist Suzanne Dupes, and Laura Cole, who is the director of the University of Tennessee's Masters Investment Learning Center. Thank you, ladies, so much for being here today. Could you each introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what you do?
All right. I guess I'm up first.
Sure.
I'm Laura Cole. I'm the director of the Masters Investment Learning Center, or the MILC, or as the students call it on campus, the MILC. We do not provide beverages there. Instead, we provide financial database software training. So I'm originally from New Jersey. Went to school at West Point on a soccer scholarship. I blew out my knee and made my way down to Alabama. Went to school at Auburn University and somehow ended up here along the way. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay. Suzanne?
Suzanne Dupes. I'm with Revolutionize Your World. It's a new company with, I have a partner, and we help people move from stuck to unstuck. How about that? But as you said, I've got tons of experience in public relations. I've worked all across the different industries. Been doing in government and academics, worked in Oak Ridge, a lot of different things. I'm a member of the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Council, who puts on this summit next week, and we're kind of busy with that. It's driving us a little bit crazy, and we are incredibly excited because when we met Monday, we're getting low on tickets, and that's really exciting and really encouraging.
How many tickets do you have?
We cap the seats at a very crowded 280, and we had about 50 tickets left, I think.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Cynthia?
I'm Cynthia Gibson. I'm the Executive Vice President, Chief Legal Officer, and Corporate Secretary for Scripps Networks Interactive. Scripps Networks employs about 1,000 people here in Knoxville. We are a content media company, and folks are probably familiar with many of our brands like HGTV, Food Network, Travel Channel, DIY Network, Cooking Channel, and Great American Country. I moved to Knoxville in 2010 when we moved our corporate headquarters from Cincinnati down to Knoxville. But for me, it was moving home. I grew up about 90 miles south of here in Andrews, North Carolina, just across the mountain. So it's been really great to be back in the South, closer to family. I married my childhood sweetheart, David Gilbert, who stays home with our three great kids, who are 14, 11, and 8. So life is busy, but a lot of fun. And I'm happy to be here today.
And we should mention something you were saying just a few minutes ago, which is that Scripps Networks Interactive is no longer in the same company with EW Scripps. Is that correct?
That's correct. In 2008, the two companies split, and EW Scripps is our sister company, and they own the Knoxville News Sentinel here in town. And are a great partner with us, but we are now separate companies.
All right. We're going to start with Suzanne and talking about the Women's Leadership Council, also the summit, and then we'll get to all of your backgrounds, because I'm really, as I said to you when you first came in, one of the reasons that I asked the three of you is that you have such different backgrounds, and now you're in leadership roles. So we're going to get to that. But Suzanne, first, let's talk about the Leadership Council, the East Tennessee Women's Leadership Council. What is it, and how did it end up becoming as large as it is? But how did then the council end up having this annual summit?
It started as an outgrowth of the Tennessee Economic Council on Women, which plans a state government council commission, and this was to be a regional body to do some activity in East Tennessee, and for years, I think, six or seven years, they did a regional economic summit. But for the last 3 years, we've decided that women in particular don't really like to talk about money. Nobody really does, but women in particular don't like to talk about money. So we thought, better, let's talk about leadership, because we've identified that, you know, we need to get women to the leadership tables. So that has been a really good shift for us. And like I said, we're almost selling out. This is our third year of the Leadership Summit. It will be next year in 2015, the 10th year of the summit altogether. So we went from being a planning committee doing one summit every year to now a council who is moving to expand our efforts. We now do also a quarterly salon where we're trying to take the things that we do at the annual summit and also do some skill-based things once a quarter at the salon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So sort of workshops or?
Right. Okay. Right, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had started those when I had a public relations agency, I'd started those on a monthly basis. And as I changed from my public relations agency to this new business endeavor, I was going to not do those anymore. And the council said, hold the phone. We don't need to stop that. We need to bring that under the auspices of the council and make that our skill-based thing that we do.
Well, at next week's summit, Cynthia is going to be receiving the Lizzie Crozier French Award.
Yes.
It's the third year that you've given the award.
Yes.
Who was she?
Lizzie Crozier French was an amazing woman. If you go down to Market Square Mall, you see this statue of these three women on the end of the mall. They're three Tennessee suffragists, and Lizzie was the East Tennessee woman. And she was amazing. She started the Ossoli Circle here in town. She and her sister were very active. I mean, they started so many things, but three of the things we talk about a lot are she was the first woman to speak before the General Assembly. She was the first woman to speak before the Tennessee Bar Association. 2 years after we got the vote, she ran for city council. She was just incredibly active, and all the time working for the right to vote for women. Mm. She's buried in the Old Gray Cemetery. You can go there and see her grave. We have criteria set for the Lizzie based on what we believe Lizzie Crozier French stood for.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and open the phone lines. The number is 974-5050, 974-5050. Again, our guests today are Cynthia Gibson of Scripps Networks Interactive. We have PR specialist Suzanne Dupes and Laura Cole, director of the UT Masters Investment Learning Center. Just an aside for a moment. Suzanne, you said something earlier that I want to ask Laura about. You said women don't like to talk about money. What was it about money that that wasn't interesting to them? How did you change the focus from money to leadership?
The turnout was pretty low it was an economic summit.
Gotcha. Laura, in your finance background, mm-hmm. and of course you're an educator too.
Yes.
Do you find that women don't like to talk about money?
Well, I guess I'm in a unique position of being surrounded by women who only want to talk about money. So there's always been a taboo associated with just being a woman as opposed to being a man, right? It's typically investing specifically is a male-dominated profession. And women, especially in the South, were usually taught to take a back seat and kind of listen to what the men have to say before offering their own opinions. On campus, we try to change that for the young women of today. We're doing a bunch of unique programs, including bringing in specialists to help train women specifically in interviewing techniques, identifying the things that women do differently than men in interviewing, learning to be a little bit more confident and aggressive while not, putting off the interviewer. And a lot of that comes from Sheryl Sandberg. I don't know if I'm sure everyone's nodding their head in here. We've all read the book Lean In, and so we're utilizing a lot of those concepts. But I agree, in general, there's a taboo with women about talking about money.
And would you also agree that there is one of the issues, too, is negotiation?
Oh, for sure, as the students would say. So I find that when I talk to women who are either 1, 2, or even 3 years out from graduating, taking their first job, or moving into their next position, rarely do they counteroffer. Whereas almost every young male I talk to goes in with a list of counter demands. And I think that's just kind of how we're taught as young ladies. It's not very ladylike. And so there's a balance to be achieved with women in business without being off-putting, as I said before, but still remaining confident and knowledgeable. So, yes, negotiations especially, unfortunately.
The good girl syndrome.
Yeah,
don't argue.
Yeah.
Just accept what you're given and don't.
Which explains the lower salary bases that women today are getting. And, I mean, you can be a strong performer and still get 5% raises, but 5% on very little is even less. So,
Well, and I think that failure to negotiate, if you do the math, each incremental amount that you don't ask for in addition has a really multiplier effect over time.
Compounding.
And I think, compounding. You're more of a mathematician than I am, but yes. And so a lot of that, I think, contributes to the disparity today.
Correct.
So the students then, what sort of outreach do you have to try to get especially female students interested in finance and investing?
Right. So one thing I do in the center with my time is I go around to women's investment groups, specifically to either young women who are want to learn about what investing is with their salaries, their 401ks. A lot of them don't feel like they have the knowledge or confidence to undertake what a stock is. We've talked to groups of women nurses before, for example. So they're very good at nursing. They're 1 to 2 years out, and they get very little coaching on what to do with this extra money that they're making. We basically donate our time and explain the basics of retirement planning, investing to young women. For the girls still in school today, I go around to the sororities, and I use a phenomenal example with purses and shoes about the effect of not paying your credit card bill on time and how interest compounds, and basically what you can afford if you paid your credit card bill and live within your means. The title of that talk is called Fiscally Fit. So the girls really seem to respond to that. And the third thing that we do is on campus itself. We invite young women to, it's called UT Leans In, and it's based on the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. We invite professionals from around campus life as well as professional life to come in and talk to the female students about things like salary negotiations, interview tips about how to dress, about how to interact at cocktail parties, just very, very basic things that young women today, not a lot of them have been exposed to. So,
but you're getting more female students who are interested in finance and business.
Yes, more and more, I would say, with each year. And a lot of that has to do at UT with the newly renovated Haslam Business Building. So that's a phenomenal complex. More often than not, at least one out of the three students that comes into the investment center and the business building itself say, this is awesome. How do I get here? What classes do I need to take? And what is a career in finance like? What is a career in accounting like? So we're seeing more and more young women today. I'm very optimistic about women in business.
Your background, as you said, you went to West Point on a soccer scholarship.
I did.
Were you interested in pursuing finance then, or did that come later?
Oh, gosh, no. My interest in finance came at a young age when my dad took me to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange when it was still public. Before all the terrorism attacks, of course, in New York City. Anyone in the general public could just walk out onto the floor. And I remember as a young girl in the 80s walking out onto the floor of the exchange into the it's a sea of paper and just seeing all the men shouting. And I asked my dad, what are they talking about? Why is everyone so angry? And my dad, it took the time to explain what investing was like. He bought me my first stock at the age of 7 the next year, Coca-Cola. I still have the certificate today, and I had an interest in finance probably at an earlier age. And when I was 10, I told my parents I wanted to be a CEO. So I didn't quite know what that was, but it took a while to get there. Having gone to West Point, I attended there for the leadership, pretty much. It's a phenomenal reputation. I really enjoyed my time there. I learned a lot about the differences between men and women in leadership roles from my time there. And the only reason I left is obviously the issues with my knee. And after I went to Auburn and got my MBA there, I learned about the differences between leadership between women in different geographical areas. Having come from the north and moving to the south, I learned that, you know, at that early age, that women in the south were very different than women in New York, to put it mildly. So,
So. The number is 974-5050, 974-5050 if you have a question or a comment for us. Cynthia, you sort of geographically went the opposite way. So you were born in the south, but you went to Ohio to work and to live. And did you find it to be culturally very different for you as a woman when you left North Carolina and went north?
Yes, it was somewhat different. I moved there straight out of law school when I was 25, and I still had my southern accent and my big blonde hair. And I will never forget sitting in a judge's chambers where I'm presenting my case, and he keeps looking out and looking at my feet, which made me very uncomfortable. And he said to me, "Well, I was just looking to see if you had shoes on with that accent." So I think you do. My accent did flatten somewhat after that, although it seems to be coming back now that I live here longer. But there certainly was a different set of social mores, to say the least, between Cincinnati, although Cincinnati sits on the Kentucky River, so it's really sits on that north-south line somewhat. Mm-hmm. So northern Kentucky was surprising to me in how southern it was, and just across the river in Cincinnati, more Midwestern feel to the city.
You were the first female partner in the law firm that you worked for up there, yes?
Yes. When I joined my law firm, I was the only woman who was a lawyer.
The only woman.
Yes, I was the only woman lawyer, and they didn't know quite what to do with me because they had the girls at the firm, but they weren't sure that I fit in with the other non-lawyers who were all women. But I was very fortunate in that the firm and its leadership were forward-thinking. So I was the first woman partner, and then the first woman who was in management there at the firm. So a lot of firsts, that's for sure.
I've heard it said before by a lot of women that they feel like, especially older women, they feel like they had to work twice as hard to reach half of the goal that they wanted. Do you feel like you had to do that too, or was it because the men you worked with were so progressive thinking that you?
It was a combination, I would say. I was fortunate that I had mentors in the firm who were supportive, but you know, that's not always the case. When I first started practicing, I would be the only woman in the courtroom. I was a trial lawyer, and so I often got comments from opposing counsel of "little lady" or equally demeaning statements. So since most of my competitive day-to-day work was with men outside my firm, I did feel like I always had to work harder, work longer, be smarter, be more prepared than my opposing counsel, particularly early on when I was one of the few women who was in litigation at that time.
I want to ask you about what you think of when you think of leadership, and in a setting like that where you're the only female in management and the only female partner in a law firm, where all of the other women in the office are paralegals and secretaries and administrative assistants and whatnot, what does leadership mean to you in a setting like that, as opposed to now, say, at Scripps, where it's more diverse?
Well, I think when you are the senior woman in a role that is unique, that you have not only an obligation to perform just in your everyday job, but you also have an obligation to understand that you really are seen as a role model, and that you have to lift as you climb, so to speak, because you really have the voice of the women in the organization. And I always took that as a real responsibility. And I didn't always live up to that responsibility. When I had my first child, they used to say, "Wow, we never even noticed that you had a baby," because I worked very hard, went back very quickly, and made sure that my career didn't miss a beat. And I later learned that that was really not a service to the women who came behind me, and became a real advocate for the fact that our law firm needed to understand that women who had children could still be equally committed to their careers, but also needed time after they had a child. And by the time I had my third child, I did stay home for a period of time. I mean, technology had come along and you could keep things moving. But again, I think when you're the senior woman, lift as you climb is very important.
Mm-hmm. And now you're the breadwinner.
I am. My husband stays home, so we have a very untraditional arrangement, but it has been great. When we had our third child, we decided that, you know, three children is a lot to balance, and he was traveling a lot with his work, and we decided that it was time to make that decision, and it's been terrific. It really has.
Yeah. It's getting to be a lot more common, too.
It is.
There were a couple of studies that I was reading about women in leadership roles and in executive positions, and it's hard to tell whether or not the number is growing. I'm assuming that it's growing some. Can any of you speak to that at all? Do you know, Suzanne, what sort of the latest as far as the Economic Council concerned?
I was looking at some numbers at catalyst.org, and I don't think there's a great growth at the Fortune 500 level right now.
That's
still
correct.
Yeah.
But the statistics really have not changed that much in the last 10 years. I just did some research in particular in the legal profession and chief legal officers like my position. It's really remained relatively static, even though women make up more than half of all the graduates of law schools. Mm-hmm. There really is still a dramatic drop off in women who become partners and women who end up leading legal departments. The statistics are still rather grim.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then the next question to be drawn on from that statement is, how much does that have to do with the women, and how much does that have to do with the men who are around them?
You know, I think that's one of the things that our speaker next week, Rebecca Shambaugh, is going to talk about, sticky floors versus glass ceiling. I think one of the things and she's going to say this, is that we got to involve the men more in the conversation. Because women need sponsorship as much as they do need mentorship. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. And it was interesting. I was at a program at Stanford that our company partially sponsored at the time that the Lean In book came out. And a lot of the studies show that there are inherent biases that we all have that are equally held between men and women. They do the blind studies about resumes and whether it's a man's name or a woman's name. And so I agree with you that if we have a more inclusive conversation so that it's not so anti-male, but let's all talk about all of the biases that we equally hold and how do we make a difference there, I think that's really the way to approach the issue.
That's what we've got a male speaker this year at the conference for first time.
Okay.
And I think next year we're considering doing a panel, a mixed gender panel, to talk about some of the issues. Because we really have to. I mean, there are men out there parenting daughters. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're thinking about these issues now. And a lot of single men parenting daughters. Mm-hmm. So they want the best for their daughters. So it can't be just, it's not an us versus them kind of situation.
Yeah. Laura, in your capacity as educator, mm-hmm. How much do you see your female students hold themselves back?
Right. So one of the things that I find interesting in the last couple minutes is thinking about how I've noticed that there's an increase in the number of female undergraduate business students. I wouldn't say dramatic, and it hasn't been statistically tested, but I've just noticed that each year there seems to be more and more females in the classroom in the roles of not just your traditional marketing, which it was almost always dominated by females, but in accounting and finance. As to your point, I don't know. I guess it's just there's a disparity between the number of women coming through these four-year programs and then ending up in these leadership roles at these organizations. And that's a little worrisome to me. So I'm an optimist that the potential is there. But I guess I'm a little concerned, is it the skill set we're giving them? Are they not being aggressive about taking the right courses or having support in the curriculum? Are they not getting the right mentors, you know, when they're in college? I try to be an equal opportunist mentor. In other words, I don't just mentor females, right, although I try to make sure that I'm available for them. But I do the young gentlemen as well. But, you know, along the lines of mentors, I find that I usually have to go up to the young ladies and tell them, you know, do you realize you have an aptitude for a quantitative subject like investments or finance? And they're usually shocked. They're like, no, I just always thought, you know, accounting was for me, or, you know, I didn't realize that I was in the, you know, top 1% of 200 students taking a class. So the girls are always shocked when they can do this. And, you know, then I say, well, you know, would you like some help talking about some career options for you? Maybe there's things you haven't considered. Whereas I'm almost always approached each semester by young, aggressive gentlemen who tell me how they're right for careers and investments and finance. And, you know, they're selling me on themselves. So it's interesting to notice the diversity.
Yeah, it's definitely a different socialization.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Let's take a break real quick. You're listening to Dialogue on WUOT Knoxville 91.9 FM. My guests today are Cynthia Gibson and Suzanne Dupes and Laura Cole. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call at 974-5050. You are listening to Dialogue on WUOT Knoxville 91.9 FM. Good afternoon. I'm Chrissy Kuiper with Cynthia Gibson, Suzanne Dupes, and Laura Cole. Laura is with the Master's Investment Learning Center here at UT. Cynthia Gibson is corporate attorney for Scripps Networks Interactive. And Suzanne Dupes is a PR specialist who owns her own business. Suzanne, let's talk about that for a minute, because I guess when I met you, you were working for Mike Ragsdale, former County Mayor Mike Ragsdale's office,
right,
as communications director.
Right.
So part of your background is not only your own business, but you've worked for government, you've done journalism, you've done all kinds of different stuff. So can you talk a little bit about developing, because I want to come back to what Laura said just before the break about women not really knowing about their skills and being surprised when somebody says, hey, you're really good at this, or you know, you have an aptitude for this.
Right.
How did you decide to get out of all of that and just start your own business?
Well, getting out of all that wasn't exactly my choice.
Ah, yes.
If you recall.
Yes.
But once I got out of all of that, I kind of made myself unhireable around here, by the way, I got out of it. So I had to do something on my own. So I decided, well, I'll start my own PR business. Well, my real true passion is the stuff I'm doing with the Leadership Council, helping women. But that's a volunteer, not pay thing. Well, you can't eat off of that. Volunteer stuff. You can't eat off volunteer stuff. So as I was doing the other thing, it just wasn't making my heart sing. But I had met this Eric Benson, who's my partner, who is the male who's speaking next week, who has more energy than you've ever met. So I met him at a networking group, and we've been talking. And as time went on, the model that he has about empowering people is like, I kept saying, I finally said, look, I'm going to steal that model because that really works for what I think women need to do in leadership. And he's like, well, okay. And then the more we talked, we thought, you know what, let's just go into business together.
Hmm.
So that's how the new company came to be. But so it was, for me, it was all about finally at this stage of my life following my passion. That's how I got to where I am. What was your question?
It basically had to do with skills. But, I mean, as you say, it's sort of necessity was the mother of invention for you. And you went basically into your own business.
But the thing I wanted to say about what Laura mentioned is, you know, we lose young women in the STEM field, science, technology, education, and math, so early. And I think it's because, and what brought that home to me is over the weekend, we took my grandson, who's 7, to enroll in this Lego camp with this new company that's in West Knoxville. And just before that, he has twin 2-year-old sisters. And they were at our house, and they got these Duplos, you know Duplos? They got building blocks out. And they were just building these towers. And I'm like, holy cow, where did this building skill come from? It's just natural for them, these little 2-year-old girls, building them, blocking them down, building them. And so I talked to the owner, because all the camps they had were geared toward boys. you know, superheroes and pirates and robots. And I said, you know, we need to talk because girls. And he said, well, you know, really, that's a good idea because girls are the best builders, but we only get like 20% of girls in here. So somehow we're not nurturing that in young girls. And if we did nurture more of those kinds of strategic thinking and whatever it is, the math kinds of skills, I think we wouldn't have the issue that you're dealing with if we would continue to nurture those skills in young girls.
It's slowly happening. I mean, I know that that UT is doing a lot of outreach toward high schoolers, especially females, trying to get them into the engineering programs and
but we've
and
already lost
programs.
Them by then.
Yeah, that's a problem. Like to hear some ideas on how to, you know.
Well, I think a lot of it is socialization that mm-hmm. many of us don't even think about. And I have an anecdote in my own family. As you can imagine, my daughter is growing up with a fairly strong female role model. And yet going into first grade, we were talking about what she might want to be. And we were talking about being a doctor. And she said, oh, I could never be a doctor. I'm not good in math. And I had no idea where that came from because obviously we've exposed her to everything. And so I talked to her teacher there at the Episcopal School of Knoxville, and they have done a phenomenal job of sort of paying attention to that in her and really nurturing the fact that you are good in math. And in fact, at the end of this year, they said she's an excellent mathematician, but somewhere along the way in her head, just through school and interacting with other children, she had lost her confidence in her math ability. So I think we also have to be very intentional about our young girls knowing that you need to do proactive things to counterbalance the information and stereotypes that they're getting from wherever they're getting it, because she certainly wasn't getting that at home.
Mm-hmm. But you know what just came up for me, Cynthia? You and I were talking before. We're word people. I wonder how many times our daughters have heard us say, I'm not good at
math. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that carries on to our children when they hear us as the women as who they might admire say stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is a lot of this could be combated with knowledgeable education in the home. So here we are putting a lot of importance on, you know, are they getting the right support in classes, you know, from K through six, whereas maybe just ourselves with our own family structure and friends. And when you're I have a lovely niece and nephew, and my sister-in-law is a doctor herself and a strong female. And those kids have the right support and confidence. And specifically my niece is told, you can be whatever you want to be.
Right.
And she's beautiful. You're beautiful and smart. And these are your talents and very developed. But probably not all kids get that. But it's important for us to be cognizant of the little things we say as women. When we admit a weakness in front of young girls, the girls themselves are often like, well, is that my weakness too? Or, you know, will that impede me somehow? So, yeah.
The number is 974-5050, 974-5050. John, I was just about to get to your call. So if you feel like it, please give us a call back. 974-5050. I like the fact that you're saying, you know, we have to do this at home. But obviously it has to happen in education, too, because there are different ideas. I mean, I know I had a different idea of myself at school than I did in my personal life at a very young age.
Right.
And so we need to have more access to, you know, math, engineering, science for everybody, you know, especially girls.
Especially young women.
Yeah.
I know I never knew I was mathematically inclined until I got to West Point. And I took a placement test, and I was in the, you know, top 1% of all cadets, along with mostly other men. I don't know if it's I feel like the kids are tested to death with aptitude tests, but maybe, you know, really being aware of when they're taking aptitude tests of giving support to the young women who are higher at those quantitative subjects. You know, and told, you know, you're not just a phenomenal female in this subject, you're a phenomenal person, you know, out of all people taking this test, you're doing this. So, mm-hmm. you know, that could be definitely done by the administration, maybe. I don't know if they genderize test results at all in the younger schools. That would be interesting
to know.
Like
I'm not a parent, so I don't know how they set it up.
I'm not yet, so I guess I would defer to Cynthia. And
no, not that I'm aware of. I mean, you certainly get the tests and they compare to other ages and populations, but I have not seen gender results that are just provided in general to parents.
Yeah.
Well, companies like Scripps have several friends who work there and love it. One of the reasons they really like it is because it's extremely forward thinking. There's a very diverse workforce. It's you've been there for a long time. Has it changed over the years, or has it always been pretty gender equal?
Well, I joined in 2009, so after the companies split. But what I can tell you based on my experience there, that I believe a lot of it comes from our founder, president, and CEO, Ken Lowe. I mean, Scripps Networks Interactive is really a Cinderella story. It was started in 1994 with 14 people and his idea to create Home and Garden Television, a cable network devoted to all things home. And our core audience are women. And not only that, our core values really do focus on diversity. And a lot of that comes from Ken and the other founders of the company. We were very fortunate to have a first woman leader, Susan Packard, who retired several years ago, who took the Lift As You Climb obligation seriously. And I think all of us who've been there since then have benefited. But I can tell you, I told people coming to Scripps was like breathing fresh air for the first time in my life, where there were other women in the bathroom at leadership meetings. And I really don't feel like being female is an issue at all. And compared to sort of my life in the trenches as a trial lawyer, it really, truly has been a great experience. But it's something that's done with a lot of intentionality, because you can't get there accidentally. And so we spend a lot of time and effort thinking about it and focusing on it and making sure that we provide opportunities for all of our employees.
Do you, I'm assuming, I mean, you have some contact with colleague corporations, I'm sure, especially in entertainment. Is that the trend for all of these corporations?
I have a lot of friends in corporate America, and I think a lot of corporate America has realized that this is an issue. There's a lot of studies around sort of financial performance based on the diverse nature of your board and your leadership. But I will tell you that I have seen in practice there's a difference between when it's done real and authentic as between when it's done just to check the box and say that you're doing it. And there are companies that really have been early movers and very good at this. Deloitte and Touche comes to mind. They really were an early mover around women and involving women in their organization. And it had to do with what something Laura said earlier, their CEO had daughters. And he connected the dots between the great outflow of women and what did that mean for his girls when they became professionals, and he really made a stake in the ground that they needed to do something about it, and they really have. But I think it takes effort and commitment in order to make it happen, but I wouldn't say it's universal.
And the vision that women can even be professionals, you know? I mean, for a man now, 30 years ago, it would have been, you know, basically unheard of, 40 years ago, for a man to look at his daughters and say, I'm going to change my company so that they can be professionals like me, you know, executives one day. That would have been unheard of. I mean, in my lifetime, it would have been unheard of. Do you spend time with law students now?
I have not, although we do some partnering with the University of Tennessee, but I have spent a lot of time with young lawyers over time in helping them think about how they might think about their career, because it's daunting, and I think it's daunting to make that decision about how you balance things in life and how you handle, particularly as a lawyer where you're supposed to be a zealous, tough advocate, when you are a woman, and how you make that balance. And some of the studies from the Stanford work that underlies Sheryl Sandberg's book talk about that narrow balance of behavior for women, that you really have to balance a very narrow seesaw between being aggressive and being affable. And our seesaw is much shorter than men's. And I knew that intuitively somehow growing up, but certainly now it was great to see that the social science studies And research really affirmed that, that our seesaw is just much shorter.
Do you feel like that's changing? Any of you? No?
No.
No,
yeah.
Suzanne?
No.
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 Really?
The B word is still out there.
Yeah, that's true.
The two B words. You know, yeah. There's also the big, the bossy pants or the bossy movement that's out there. Don't say bossy. You familiar with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's only a matter of time, right? I mean, the more women who are in executive positions, the more women CEOs, the more women business owners, the more, isn't that likely to change?
Well, a matter of time, but how much time? Mm-hmm. You know, they're projecting that the gender gap's going to close in 2057. So maybe by then.
As far as pay is concerned, or?
Yeah, the pay gap.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to close.
In 43 years, possibly.
Wow. That's the day to look forward to, right?
Well, and I think if you look at legislation as relatively new, it was just the early 60s that you had Title VII, where there really was true legal protection between men and women. And certainly the trend lines went up pretty rapidly after that, but they've flattened out mm-hmm. in recent years. And what is it that we need to do to keep that trend line going more up rather than more of a very gradual growth, which is where it is now?
Mm.
Paycheck Fairness Act would be one step.
Yes.
Yes.
974-5050, 974-5050. If you have a question or a comment for Cynthia Gibson, Suzanne Dupes, and Laura Cole, 974-5050. Laura, I just want to ask you a little bit more about finance. This is a subject I don't know anything about at all. You said that you were inspired when your dad took you to the stock exchange and you learned about, you know, investments. And,
right.
Did that make you an oddball among your girlfriends? Or, again, you said
It still makes me an oddball among my girlfriends.
Yeah.
So most of my female friends are in other professions, and gladly so. I like the balance. In finance, especially in investments, it's often very intense work environment. The movies like Wolf of Wall Street aren't necessarily what I do, depict what I do, but the intensity is there. It's nice to be balanced by females. I have friends who are attorneys. Two of my best girlfriends work at TVA and contracts, and one is interior designer. But yeah, I kind of stand alone often at meetings. The bathroom comment Cynthia said before really struck with me, because many times at conferences, I'm glad that I'm one of the few females attending, given that it means that it's easy bathroom time. So, but that being said, you stand alone, but I'm used to it, and I think it suits my personality. I wish at a younger age, probably someone had informed me that of what the career potential or opportunities are in finance. It's not just investments. There's corporate finance. There's real estate. I play soccer with Chelsea Stevens at Capital Financial. You'll see her on the TV every so often. She's young 20s. She goes out and she works with clients, so it's primarily client-based financial services. So finance always had a big mystery to me, and I think it does for a lot of people, but similar to how accounting is not just taxes,
right?
And how lawyers, when I tell my people, my husband's an attorney, they just think personal injury. So there's a lot of different career potential there, but I think as a woman in finance in general or in business, often you have to, even in this day and age, be ready to be one of the fewer females. I haven't always been the only one, so I'm grateful to Cynthia and others that came before me to really pave the way. But the girls, these young girls, have a lot of work ahead of them before we're the majority in the room, or even where it's 50-50. So I would say it's usually one of two, maybe three females. Usually, you know, so the ratio is about 20% of any meeting I go to.
Gotcha. So. We have a call from Bob in Knoxville. Bob, are you there?
Bob is here.
Hi, Bob. What's your question?
My question is, I've got a good friend who's a doc. GP, and he is he gripes about female physicians not practicing. He says he went to UT down in Memphis. Mm-hmm. He said half the class is female, and I don't know, something like 30% practice full time. He says it's a terrible waste of taxpayer money. He's a rural doc, and they're starving for docs out there. He said that although it might seem unfair, we need physicians, and they're being the happy homemaker in Gettysburg.
Huh. Okay. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Thanks.
We had also a question on Twitter about advice for stay-at-home women who are reentering the workforce with a STEM degree. I'm not sure. You're asking about local resources, and I'm not sure, but I'm going to do some research and see if I can figure that out for you and put something on our webpage. Do any of you have any? I'm seeing blank faces. No.
Well, I guess I would just say in response to Bob's comment mm-hmm. is if you look at the support for women who have had children in the United States and you compare it, for example, to the support for women in European countries, that is a huge difference. Yeah. And you do not see the dropout in the workforce for childbearing in those countries where there is really robust child care leave laws. Those sorts of things in those countries, the statistics are pretty dramatically different compared to this country where childbearing really does make a big difference in your ability to manage the career, family, children dynamic. And in my family, we chose for my husband to stay home because those sources aren't out there. And a lot of families have to make that decision because we just don't have the support that many other countries do.
Right. Also, I wonder if it has to do, and Susan, I want you to address this. I wonder if it has to do with opening the practice and being able to get the funding to open the practice. When you first started your business, you started with a partner, right?
No, when I started my public relations business, I was solo.
Okay.
And, you know, that's something that somebody practices individually, there's so much more to it than just doing your craft, just being, for example, a doctor. So if you think about the practice of a doctor, you've got to tend to your patients, but you also have to schedule the patients. You have to process the insurance. There's so much paperwork you would have to do. I mean, you couldn't do it by yourself. You would have to pay a staff person. So to have just an individual doctor practice, you would have to have staff people. So it's an expensive proposition to do that. You'd have overhead and patients. You know, it's a very expensive proposition to do something like that. And you know,
I was
it's
just
not
wondering,
easy.
No, and I was just wondering. One of the things that I was reading this week and you know prepping for the show is that. Women who are business owners, mm-hmm. a lot of them, the majority of them reported having trouble getting angel capital to start their businesses.
Right, right. Well, and that's angel capital a lot of times comes in if you have a product. Mm. A service-oriented business would have a much more difficult time getting angel capital. And one of the things you spend like 70 or 80% of your time marketing when you have a new business.
Let's take just one more quick call, and then we're probably going to be almost done for today. We have Lauren on the phone from Knoxville. Lauren, are you there?
I am.
What's your question?
Well, I would like to respond to John. I'm a female physician, and I found, well, when I was in medical school, I always wondered why women didn't work all the way, weren't going to be full-time employees as they, and now I realize there's a lot of societal pressures on females as we become practicing physicians and start to raise our families. And if you don't have the right partner or the right business partners, your societal pressures to raise your family and take care of all the mom duties really weigh on being a full-time employee.
Right. Is there any, and that's sort of what Cynthia said after we took John's call. Is there anything else, do you think, in your opinion, Lauren, that's happening to keep women from pursuing that full-time medical practice after
graduation? Well, I think when you have a male physician and his wife has a baby and he takes half a day off, when the woman is expected to take, you know, 8 weeks off, I think, you know, if he was at home with his wife, you know, taking some of those demands off her, you know, I think that our society would start to realize that it takes a partnership, it takes the village to raise a family, and it shouldn't be the woman's complete responsibility. It takes that loving partner to make everything work.
To help. Right.
Right.
Okay. Thank you for your call, Lauren. Thanks very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Just a few last words, then. We have just a minute before we have to wrap up. So I want to thank you all for being here, but any last words about the subject or the summit or anything else you'd like to say?
I'm really glad that Lauren called in, because the notion that any female professional would waste taxpayers' money, I think it just... I'm not normally speechless, but so I was really grateful for a female physician herself to call in with a knowledgeable response. And just as an educator myself, I just want to say I'm optimistic about the potential with the young woman that I see coming through, and I always think that we can do more.
Suzanne?
I'd like to give our URL.
Okay, please
EastTNWomensLS.com. EastTNWomensLS.com.
And that's also on our website.
Yay. Go register.
Yep, at WUOT.org. Cynthia?
And I'd just like to briefly say I'm very honored to be the recipient of the Lizzie Crozar French Award. She was an amazing woman, and I'm looking forward to the event next Friday. So thank you.
Again, our guests are Cynthia Gibson of Scripps Networks Interactive, Suzanne Dupes, and Laura Cole of the Masters Investment Learning Center here at UT. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Thank you all, ladies, so much. Today, I want to turn off my own microphone. Thanks, Matt Powell, for handling phone calls and production, and thank you to everybody who called in to participate. If you missed part of the show or you want to hear it again, it'll be posted in just a little bit on our webpage at WUOT.org. Our next dialogue is July 2nd at 1 p.m. We hope you'll join us then. I believe Matt Powell is hosting. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Dialogue is a production of listener-supported public radio at WUOT Knoxville, broadcasting from the University of Tennessee at 91.9 FM and WUOT HD1 Knoxville, and we're streaming at WUOT.org. Alan Elstrom is up next with the afternoon concert. It's 2 o'clock.